May it please the court. My name is Roger Mandel, and I represent the appellant Kenneth Graham, and if possible, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Due to time limitations and subject to other questions by the court, I'd like to make one argument today as to why the district court erred in holding that the Arkansas savings statute kept the Stonebridge policy purportedly covering Mr. Graham from being void ab initio, and one argument as to how the district court erred in dismissing based on limitations. As regards the savings statute, which is Arkansas Code annotated section 2379.118, its plain and unambiguous language does not save the Stonebridge policy from invalidity. It merely provides that, and I quote, an insurance policy issued and otherwise valid that contains any condition or provision not in compliance with state law is not rendered invalid. It does not render valid insurance policies that violate Arkansas law in other manners. And the Stonebridge policy does not violate Arkansas law because it contains an illegal or illegal condition or provision. So the saving statute simply did not apply.
I have to tell you, Mr. Mandel, your argument sort of turns the whole statute on its head. I can't imagine the Arkansas Supreme Court is going to say to an insured who's paid 20 years of premiums that because this policy was never validly was invalid, that you can collect nothing on the policy. It's designed to protect your clients. I know it's not designed to protect the insurance company. They're using it as a sword, but it just seems like this is not the way the Arkansas Supreme Court would look at this case.
Well, let me point, Your Honor, to the United Order of Good Samaritan case decided by the Arkansas Supreme Court in 1922, and you can find it at 244 Southwest 439. And the court said there, and I quote, "The general rule is that if a statute prohibits a corporation from making a contract of a certain kind, that contract is void," close quote. And then it held specifically, like our case, that an insurance policy issued to a policyholder ineligible to receive coverage under an Arkansas statute is void ab initio as against public policy. And it said that's true even where the violated statute itself does not expressly.
Was that a gaming principle case?
I'm sorry?
Was that a gaming principle?
No, case? It's an insurance policyholder case.
No insurable interest?
No. It was a group policy issued to a fraternal organization. And the statute in Arkansas said you could only be a member and thus eligible for the group policy if you join between the ages of 16 and 70.
What's the name of that again?
That is the United Order of Good Samaritans case, which is found at 240.
I don't see it cited in your brief.
It's in the reply brief, Your Honor. And in that case, the court held, and this was a claim by the insured seeking coverage, his wife actually, after he passed away, and they said that because he was ineligible to be a member of the fraternal order and thus ineligible to get the group coverage offered by the fraternal order, that he could not recover under the policy. So that's a case where the Arkansas Supreme Court specifically said that at common law, that even an insured could not recover, and even though the statute violated itself, did not provide invalidity as a provision.
But so, that's because the insured was not eligible. I mean, if you have a statute in Arkansas that says you have to register with the Secretary of State to issue a policy, you issue a policy, you're not registered with the Secretary of State, and you pay premiums for 20 years and the person dies, I don't think the insurance company can then come in and say, well, we weren't registered. Sorry, Mr. Insured or Mrs. Insured. You don't get the $100,000. Maybe you get your $10,000 premiums back.
Well, Your Honor, two responses to that. Okay.
I think that's not what the Arkansas statute would ever say.
Well, Your Honor, the Arkansas statute, I think, was clearly aimed at that unfairness. But the Arkansas statute, unlike some other state statutes, is limited in its application. It only is where the insurance policy is illegal because it contains an illegal condition or provision. Other states simply say, there's, for example, North Carolina says, if you violate the insurance statutes in any manner, the policy still remains valid. The Arkansas legislature didn't go that far. It said that the savings statute applies and changes this common law rule set out by the Arkansas Supreme Court in 1922 if you have a policy that's illegal because it contains an illegal condition or provision. Now, in this case, the illegality is that it was not issued to an eligible policyholder, as well as not being filed and approved for the Department of Insurance. And in no way, shape, or form can one reasonably argue that issuing it to an ineligible policyholder is a condition or a provision contained in the policy. So the plain and unambiguous...
Well, you can argue that, but it's not plain and unambiguous to me.
Well, Your Honor...
I don't have any cases that go there.
Well, Your Honor, who the policy is issued to and whether it's approved by the State Board of Insurance cannot conceivably be a condition or a provision contained in the policy. That plain language limits it to that particular circumstance, and I don't see any way without torturing the English language.
Lawyers can't say can't inconceivable all the time when it is quite conceivable.
Well, Your Honor, you would have to explain to me how the issuance to a non-eligible...
Condition written in a statute almost 100 years ago can't possibly mean a term of the policy or cannot mean eligibility?
No, Your Honor, because that who it's issued to and whether it was approved is not something contained in the policy, and it's not a condition or
a
provision.
It's usually right there in the deck page.
That a condition is something that limits the obligation of the insurer by saying that a condition, something, an event has to occur, or that the policyholder has to do something.
So, I just don't think Arkansas would say. Under the Arkansas statute, a policy has to be registered with the insurance commissioner, right?
That's one of the two.
And you're saying that it wasn't registered, therefore it's void.
But that's
I can't believe that every policy that may not have been issued or may have been issued without being registered with the insurance commissioner, that they would say those are void, and after you paid your premiums for 15 or 20 years, you get no coverage.
Well, Your Honor, two things. Number one, our main argument is it was issued to an ineligible policyholder, that it was not issued to an eligible group or blanket under the group and blanket insurance policies. And those provisions have important purposes beyond purposes, which is that when I'm doing group insurance, we want to make sure that it's a group that has an interest in actually vetting the insurance policy and making sure.
Well, that's a whole different argument. It doesn't make this person ineligible. I mean, I understand your argument that this was a made-up group, but because it was made up, everybody's eligible to be in it, right?
No, Your Honor. If there's not a group, the policy is illegal and void ab initio.
The policy is illegal.
Let's
go beyond that for a second. Let's assume that we don't agree with your argument. Do you have any other argument of how he was damaged, assuming this policy was in effect?
Number one, Your Honor, we would also argue that the policy, as you point out, it was designed to protect insurers, and that it should not be construed to protect insurers who are being subject to a claim.
In Francis, it protected the insurer.
It protected the insured, but...
Well, okay, so your categorical argument is refuted by the only Arkansas opinion on the statute.
That was to protect the insured. In this case, we're talking about protecting the insurer is how they're trying to use it, is to protect
only
the insurer.
As you've structured your claim.
Well,
if this was a suit for benefits on a claim denied,
well, Your Honor,
then the saving statute would protect the insured.
Well, two things, Your Honor. One, unfortunately, that is the law in Arkansas right now. But
what is the law?
that, and if you don't fall in the savings statute, which this particular instance doesn't, that an insured cannot make a claim. But we have the additional argument that this statute should not be construed in favor of the insurer to prevent a refund policy. At common law in a number of other states before the issuance of savings statutes, what they did was say, yes, the policy is illegal ab initio, but we're going to say by estoppel that an insurer who issues an illegal policy cannot deny coverage to the insured. But they did not apply that estoppel effect in reverse to prevent a insured who says it was an illegal policy and I want my premiums back from recovering. So by in this particular suit where we're seeking a recovery of premiums, then this statute should not apply because its intent is to protect insureds, not insurers. In other words, other states have.
I understand your argument. What I'm asking, though, is there anything short of an all or nothing in this case that you're arguing? You've made all kinds of allegations that besides the fact it was illegally issued, that it was a bad policy, it was tantamount to a fraud, but you don't actually ever say, what I'm trying to figure out is, where does that get you? Let's assume that the savings clause applies. Where does the fact that it's a bad policy get you?
Well, it's not that a bad policy. It's that we had misrepresentation claims that are not based upon illegality and voidness. We argued that it was misleading about the coverage, that it claimed it was going to give you $1 million of disability coverage, period, and then in fact what it gave you was coverage only in incredibly limited circumstances. We also claim that there was a misrepresentation that we will pay covered claims, and in fact they had an unstated policy.
Misrepresentation by whom?
By the...
I mean, you can't have an unjust enrichment, seems to me, fails automatically if the policy is not void. And why do we have only Stonebridge left? What's the fraud claim with respect to Stonebridge?
Well, we're arguing that we can base unjust enrichment on the fact that they made misrepresentations regarding the policy coverage. So what we got was a policy that was worth less than what was represented to us and worth less than the premiums. And that
okay, so I guess to follow up on what you're talking about, who made the misrepresentations, how were they made, and where were they made?
Okay.
What do we look at to say you represented $1 million in coverage, but you only gave us $50,000. Where do we look to see that, who made that representation?
Your Honor, in the First Amendment complaint, what we argue is that there was a conspiracy among Stonebridge and Catamaran, who was the main marketing
okay.
agent, and that collectively that they sent out both pre and post coverage documentation representing that there was disability coverage, but $1 million in disability coverage, but in fact what was received under the Stonebridge policy was a virtually worthless coverage because of the number of restrictions on coverage and the number of exclusions. We also argue that implicit in all of the representations
and all those documents are in the record, so we can go and look and see what was represented.
The allegations are in the First Amended complaint. In some cases, the allegations are stated without attaching an exhibit. In some cases, there are exhibits attached to the First Amended complaint. But then there's also the implicit representation that we're going to inherent in issuing the coverage, that we're going to pay covered claims. And we allege that they had a systematic policy and practice of denying every claim and forcing people to file lawsuits in order to get coverage. And obviously, there's a vast difference in value between a policy which will pay a covered claim appropriately and one that you can never recover on unless you file a lawsuit in order to enforce it. In fact, I would suggest that nobody would pay a premium for a policy that won't pay unless you have to sue the insurance policy. And so
a purported class action?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, Mr. Graham wouldn't be in that last one you mentioned. He never made a claim. Never had a claim. He's not a member of the class you just described.
No, Your Honor, we're not claiming that he was injured by having a claim denied. We're claiming that he is injured by having he paid premiums for insurance policy that wasn't worth what he paid, because a policy that if you made a claim you would they wouldn't pay it and you would have to sue it is worth less than one that an insurer would honor if there was a valid claim. It's a matter of the worth of the policy.
What's your best case from another jurisdiction on this? I mean, these issues have been going on all over the country. I guess you've done a lot of them. And what's your best? What's your favorite case from another jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I would have to say that we cited some cases from New York and one from North Carolina in our original brief, the Richardson case from North Carolina and the Posner case from New York, which sort of established this principle that these statutes and the common law before the statute were to protect the insured and not the insurer. And that the insurer, essentially the insured, had the right to either.
Well, you've made the argument. I just asked you for sites.
Okay.
How about your other, the unjust enrichment and fraud and conspiracy to issue worthless policies for which you'll never accept a claim?
I don't have a specific case to cite you on that. That's just sort of the general principles of
but those allegations have been made. I read what's the Louisiana case in Eastern District of Louisiana, that
the Watson case.
Yes, I mean that went through all the issues you've discussed this morning and more.
Right, and I think
and
that's
them all.
That's an important distinction between that case, the Watson case. Their saving statute had a paragraph A, which was basically the same as the Arkansas.
Time is up. Is there any contra Watson case on these issues other than the savings?
There's not a directly contrary case to Watson, but we believe it's distinguishable.
Okay. Mr. Clark?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Clark. Represent Transamerica Life Insurance Company, which at the time this lawsuit was filed was known as Stonebridge Life Insurance Company. I actually want to start right where Judge Loken, you left off, and set this case in context. This is just the most recent in a long line of cases, statewide class actions around the country. In all the cases that have proceeded to a judgment on a motion to dismiss or on a motion for summary judgment, the district court that has decided the case has rejected the plaintiff's argument that they have viable standing or that these policies are invalid for the very same allegations that were alleged in this case. My understanding from reading their reply is that their conversion claim has been abandoned, so I want to focus on those main issues that have been addressed in all the other cases. And by the way, we're not talking about, you know, some kind of mix in the case law where some courts went one way on this issue and some courts on the other way. I mean, we're talking about a number of cases from California to New York to South Carolina, North Carolina, Louisiana. You mentioned the Watson case, and they all uniformly hold that for, as I said, for standing reasons and for validity reasons, that these claims cannot proceed.
Now, just to set the stage, for purposes, this is here on motion to dismiss. So under,
yes.
For purposes of motion to dismiss, we have to accept the plaintiff's allegations that the policies were invalidly issued.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Well,
you may disagree with it, but their claim they were issued in violation of Arkansas law.
Yes, so we have to accept the allegation that they were issued in violation of Arkansas law. We do not accept the allegation that as a result that meant that the policies were invalid and unenforceable.
That, I understand that.
Okay.
So, and in fact, have you paid claims under Arkansas policy?
Yes, although because we're on a motion to dismiss, that's not in the record. Nationwide, Stonebridge has paid millions of dollars in claims in this lawsuit. But as I said, I'm not sure that's relevant to what we're talking
about. So it's an invalid policy, but your position is that because of the savings statute, you still would be obligated to pay claims pursuant to the policy. Is that right?
Yes, but I want to point out that the savings statute is a separate and distinct argument from the standing argument.
I know, but I want to make sure. So just so we're clear,
yes.
If a person who had one of these policies came to Stonebridge today, they would pay the claim, assuming that they fell under the terms of the policy, and you would not raise an objection that it's invalid under Arkansas law.
We would not, assuming that the claim was for an injury that took place prior to the cancellation of the entire program.
But wouldn't you concede that if under Arkansas law there's a viable claim for a refund of premiums, then Mr. Graham has standing?
No, I don't.
I can't imagine why not. That standing is not the equivalent of bad claim.
Well, in this case,
he has that injury. If he has paid premiums that he has, that Arkansas law would allow him to recover, he must have standing to Article III standing to assert that claim.
None of the other cases, the courts that have looked at this have decided that way.
I don't care because there are bad standing decisions all over the country, and they continue to multiply.
I mean, the basic facts here are he didn't have a qualifying injury. He didn't make a claim for coverage.
I just gave you the injury.
Well,
he paid premiums, which his attorney says under Arkansas law he is entitled to recover. That's monetary. That's tangible.
Well,
Justice Scalia would never say anything more is required.
Since the briefing has been done here,
you're going to continue to resist that?
Well, I actually want to answer that directly, and the way I want to answer it directly is that since the briefing has been done, there's actually been a development in the Supreme Court case law on standing. What they have argued basically in their reply brief is they have shifted from an injury argument into a statutory violation argument, a statutory standing argument is what I'll call it. And in the end of the last term, the Supreme Court in the Spokio decision, which you may or may not
Spokio
be aware of.
Spokio doesn't address the point I'm making. I've read it more than once, not in the last 2 weeks.
Well,
it's not relevant to. I mean, I know where it, I can't remember even where it went, but it does not relate to a claim to recover monetary injury.
Well, it does.
Personal.
What it holds is that if your allegation is a statutory violation, you nonetheless must show a non-speculative Article III concrete risk of harm to a concrete interest. And in this case, that would in fact be the allegation that he was denied a claim because it was void.
That's not the claim I'm talking about. His claim is, I paid premiums. Arkansas law says I should be entitled to recover them. I know the whole issue is whether that's a correct assertion of Arkansas law. It may not be plausible.
Okay, well,
but they're standing to assert it, and if it's plausible, Article III is satisfied.
I do not think for a windfall refund of premiums that satisfies the injury in fact requirement of Article III. I don't see any injury that leads to damage.
So every case in which a plaintiff has recovered a windfall, the court misapplied this Article III.
No, in cases involving premiums and insurance policies, I'm arguing that there is no connection between their refund of premiums and the injury that comes from their allegations, which is the voidness of the policy. But anyway, let's talk about the voidness.
Well, if Arkansas didn't have a savings statute, what would happen?
Well, it would the same thing that would happen in New Jersey and California, which are states that don't have savings statutes, where those courts decided that on the basis of Article III standing, that their claims as alleged did not qualify. So that's really the analysis here. In this case, though, there is a savings statute, which I know that the parties have joined issue on. And seeing as I'm about halfway through my time, I do want to get to that issue. As this court mentioned, was discussing with opposing counsel earlier.
I'm not sure you even need the savings statute to challenge the voidness assertion.
Well,
insurance policies are not typically held to be void for good reason.
Well, I agree with that. I think the plain language of the saving statute is dispositive, and I do think that the court should analyze that because that was the district court's basis for his opinion.
Well, what about the unjust enrichment? What are the best cases from your perspective that would stand for the proposition that you represented one thing, and the insured, you represented one coverage, one to an insured through promotional literature? As I understand their allegation is, you send out promotional literature that said probably, you know, protect your loved ones, you'll get $1 million disability coverage if you're injured at work. And when, in fact, the policy gives them a lot less than $1 million and gives them a lot less than most of the injuries. Where does that leave us? If in fact, we accept those allegations as true, that you're promoted one type of policy and issued a different type?
Well, I think the first thing to say about that is that there are no fraud or misrepresentation claims in this case. As you questioned,
I don't think they used the word fraud, but I think they did certainly talk about misrepresentations.
Well, the basis for the unjust enrichment claim, when you look at the First Amendment petition, is this alleged violation of the group and health regulations and the filing requirements. So the misrepresentations are not mentioned in the claim itself. The fraud and misrepresentation, as I said, there are no claims. And you know, these alleged other types of allegations are also in all the other cases, and they also fail for the same standing issue that we were talking about earlier, which is, and unless and until you show some non-speculative reason for, you know, that these policies were different than originally advertised or promoted, then I don't see how you get Article III standing on those either. So I think those are the answers. Plus, those allegations have not been a large part of this case. And I think they're mostly alleged in the petition, the amended complaint, as a way of hoping to establish fraudulent concealment for statute of limitations purposes, I think is the real reason for it. With respect to the savings clause and the savings statute, I do want to mention that I fundamentally disagree with the other side's plain language argument here. Really what they're arguing about the statute is they want to say that if a particular provision is contained in a policy, the statute applies, but if it's not, if it's some kind of defect that affects the whole of the policy, then the savings statute doesn't apply. And we pointed out in our briefing that that would violate the surplusage canon of construction because of condition or provision. Their response is to define condition in such a way that it still creates a surplusage problem, because they want to say condition means conditions of coverage. But by definition, that would be in a provision in the contract. So their reading of the plain language would say a provision or a particular type of provision. The only way to make sense of the statute is that the word condition applies to particular defects in a policy that go beyond something that is in a particular policy term or provision. And that, in fact, is, as Judge Loken mentioned earlier, exactly, I think, the conclusion that one takes from the only Arkansas case that has ever even cited the savings statute, which is the Francis decision. In that case, there was a policy defect that affected the whole of the policy, and the court applied the savings statute in that case. The other thing I want to say about this is, you know, when we're usually construing statutes, we should look at legislative history and intent, and neither party has presented legislative history because we can't find any on this issue. But the only evidence we really have of intent here is the placement of this statutory provision within the context of the Arkansas Insurance Code, which is a comprehensive regulatory statute originally enacted in 1959, so 30 years after the Meekins case that they purport to rely on. And the regulatory structure gives an ample enforcement arsenal to the Arkansas Insurance Commissioner to regulate the code through fines, referral of criminal penalties, revocation of a license to practice in the business of insurance, which is certainly important to an insurance company like Transamerica that does so much business in Arkansas, disgorgement, rescission. So I think that the savings statute expresses the entirely reasonable policy choice that any potential violation of the kind here should be dealt with by the commissioner and not by private litigants. And to that end, they have our opponents have not cited to any more recent cases than 1934, and certainly no cases in which an Arkansas court has declared that an insurance policy is invalid on the alleged bases in this case. And then obviously the other issue in favor of our interpretation of the savings statute are
The insurable interest cases around the country are one place where courts have some enthusiasm found insurance policies to be void. So why doesn't that analogize to this?
Because I think that the line of cases that are more in point are in fact the line of cases that we've been developing in this litigation, and the three additional or four additional cases, I believe, on the savings statute that we presented to the court. There's out of state court out of Georgia and Oklahoma, and federal courts, the Fifth Circuit out of Louisiana, and then the Northern District of Georgia in the Williams case, have all looked at savings statutes that are virtually identical to the Arkansas statute and support our interpretation. And more to the point, you know, we have a number of it. You know, these savings statutes proliferate around the country in various forms. And as far as I can tell, there are no cases that interpret or construe these savings statutes, any of them, in the way that our opponents would like this court to do so.
I'm still troubled by Judge, back to Judge Malloy's question. Induced by fraud. An insurance policy induced by fraud is a claim pretty well known at common law, and that sort of sounds like what's alleged here. How is it the district court can do away with that claim based on its analysis that the savings statute applies?
Well, to recognize what is the particular alleged fraud in this case, it boils down to the alleged regulatory violation for group and blanket insurance policies. So it's a fraud claim
I'm not sure that's necessarily true. And we're 12b-6. I mean, the notion that a bunch of questionable conspirators got together and figured out that they would package a policy so it looked like a big insurance policy, and then the insurer would get 10 cents and the bad guys would get 90 cents, and they went off and sold it that way. That's unrelated to, or not necessarily related to, the core claim here.
I think it is related in the sense of the actual alleged misrepresentation.
Let me ask it a different way. Was it briefed? Was this problem briefed to the district court in the Rule 12b-6 briefing?
Yes. The issue about whether these alleged misrepresentations are sufficient, say, to establish standing, I believe, were briefed in Virginia Surety's brief, I believe, or it may have been Catarine's. I can't quite remember.
But standing, I mean, if you purchased an insurance policy that was induced by fraud, you've got standing to seek what remedy the common or statutory law may afford you. So once again, it seems to me standing's being tossed around awfully broadly. It isn't a standing issue, it's a did you do it issue. Assuming it was pursued effectively in both the pleading and the briefing, why doesn't that go on to the next Rule 56.
Well, I think the easiest answer to that is the basis that the district court provided, which is that the policy is valid. So the savings statute gets you there.
But facially valid doesn't mean it wasn't procured by fraud.
Well, but what I was trying to explain earlier is that the actual alleged misrepresentation for the fraud is actually the allegation that it was
it was purported to be a proper group insurance policy, but it wasn't. So it boils down to the same allegation.
But that isn't the way it was described this morning or to some extent in the plaintiff's briefs.
But that is the way it is.
The hiding of where the money went, that it didn't go to an insurer, and therefore that this wasn't bona fide insurance that was being sold.
And that's not the allegation.
Well, they claim that's the allegation. In their brief, I'm looking at pages 48 and 49. They say they claim that you failed to disclose that I think it's 80% of the premiums would go to marketing expense. You failed to disclose that you had no intention to pay disability claims. You represented that if a person became disabled that they would get $1 million cash-free payment, which they claim is false. They say you represented that if an accident left you permanently disabled, you get a lump sum payment of $1 million, which they claim is false. And they say you represented that after 12 months of continuing and permanent disability, you would receive a payment of $1 million. And they claim that's false. So why is that not specific allegations of material misrepresentations? Now, maybe none of that's false, or maybe you didn't make those representations, but that's what they allege for purposes of 12b-6.
Well, so as we expressed in our brief, for purposes of the 80% or where the money went, that's not a viable claim in Arkansas law. So there was no requirement that the insurance company disclose that to them. The with respect to a lot of the other misrepresentations, as I said earlier, they boil down to, well, why would you not have received that insurance? Because it was allegedly void. Why? Because it didn't meet the group and blanket health insurance standards. So they're all reductive claims. For allegations. I've gone way over my time. Thank you very much.
We provoked you. It was helpful. Mr. Mandel, have some time?
No, Your Honor.
A couple of minutes. There's something you want to clear up for us?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with the comments made about the non-illegality claims that Justice Malloy read out. So let me go back briefly to the invalidity claims. I think this boils down to whether the court is going to enforce Arkansas law as it stands, but rather than as the court might think it should be, and whether the court is going to actually apply the plain meaning language statute, plain meaning rule, as all three of your honors have expressed in cases over time. Now, let me ask you this.
One of the statute says if it's a violation, if any provision or condition of the policy violates Arkansas law, you're saying the whole policy violates Arkansas law. Therefore, that doesn't apply. But almost every insurance policy, and I guess we're going to have to go back and parse this one out, but almost every policy has language that says we're being issued pursuant to the laws of the state of Arkansas or the state of Iowa or the state of Minnesota or whatever it might be. So that's a provision right there that's being violated. Because the policy itself says if one of the provisions is it's being issued pursuant to state law.
Well, Your Honor, incidentally, that's another support for our misrepresentation claims, what you just stated. But, Your Honor, that might be something that the saving statute would apply to, but the fact that it was issued to an ineligible group or blanket policyholder and the fact that it was not filed and approved by the Department of Insurance would not constitute conditions or provisions contained in the policy. And under the plain language rule, that ends the statutory construction. And I think that governs it. And as far as what Arkansas law would say absent the saving statute, if the court will permit me, I just wanted to read you one quote from that United Good Samaritans case from 1922. And they're citing with approval Iowa Supreme Court case. And they say, quote, where a mutual insurance company issues a policy which it is prohibited by law to issue, the policy is illegal and void, and the fact that premiums have been paid thereon and used by the company will not stop it from pleading ultra vires to a suit on the policy. So indeed, this case has never been overruled from 1922, and whether the insurer or the insured is making a claim, an illegal insurance policy.
I understand.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. The case has been thoroughly briefed and argued. It's complicated. We'll take it under advisement. We'll do our best.